All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Well, hey there, Wisconsin. Good morning. Welcome to the State of Wisconsin Sense, this one-hour edition for this Thursday, February 9th. I'm Pat Kreitlow, just a stone's throw away from Aaron Zommers here at the Civic Media Studios on University Avenue in Madison, where it is still raining, but things are starting to slick up in the parking lots and the sidewalks, and it looks like the rain-snow line is sitting right here over Madison, whereas the snow line extends basically on that line from Green Bay to Prairie du Chien. So anything south of that, take care while you're on the roads today, especially in parts where it's going to be changing over to snow and potentially heavy snow in parts of southern Wisconsin later this morning. Coming up, we're going to talk about the power of having someone believe in you. In our hometown health segment, Dr. Kristen Lyerly features her mentor, Dr. Pat McBride, whose autobiography looks back on his days as the first ball boy for the Milwaukee Brewers, as well as his time in the locker room with the Bucks and the Packers, plus the ups and downs of growing up in a well-known but dysfunctional family, his journey to med school, and becoming a nationally recognized leader in public health. So we'll have that interview coming up live with Kristen and Dr. McBride in just a minute. Aaron, I just wanted to call attention. This is a direct fashion choice in honor of Congressman Fleece Fest from the Green Bay area. I dug out my own Fleece Fest. It's got an Eau Claire Express logo on it over here. But I just figure if it was good enough for Mike Gallagher, if we're going to be talking about, you know, State of the Union and things, I should vest up for at least one show.
Yeah, maybe I should have followed your example instead of grabbing the top t-shirt out of my drawer.
and what is featured there today, pray tell?
It is Link from The Legend of Zelda. It's about the nerdiest shirt that I own. Just happened to be sitting on top today.
Very nice. Okay. Let's see. So we are going to also hear from Congressman Mark Pocan later in this hour for a few minutes, and then we'll play the full interview tomorrow. I talked to him after he rode on Air Force One with President Biden yesterday. Aaron, I don't know if you have that handy. I left a quote from the president talking about Ron Johnson while he was in DeForest yesterday, talking to the Labor's International Union members at the training center there just outside of town here in Madison. And he noted that, along with saying a lot of what he said in the State of the Union speech, of course, but he said in the speech he was not going to name names. But while he was here, he was naming names when he talked about, you know, there were actually, despite all their booing and heckling, there are Republicans who are proposing cutting or putting, you know, Medicare and Social Security on the chopping block, including one guy from up here in Wisconsin.
You have a senator named Ron Johnson. Ron Johnson on Social Security and Medicare, quote, "We should transfer everything, so we have to consider everything every year." Come on, man.
I just love that. Come on, man. Ron Johnson, you just got a come on, man, from Joe Biden. So he is calling you out on this.
It's only one step down from a, would you just shut up, man?
No kidding. Only one person has deserved that so far. It's worth noting, we won't get to this day in music and history and the full slate today, but it does seem fitting that on this very day, when House Republicans are starting a committee to pursue various conspiracy theories, and they will be hearing from Senator Ron Johnson, probably Congress's biggest peddler of conspiracy theories, it's fitting that on this day in 1950, this is the anniversary when Wisconsin Senator Joe McCarthy delivered a speech in which he claimed to have a list of members of the Communist Party working in the U.S. State Department. And that is where we find ourselves all these decades later, once again having to relearn the line, those who do not learn from history are condemned to repeat it. And that is what we have right now. We saw it in Congress yesterday, with Republicans spending the entire day on Twitter, talking about Twitter and talking about their personal grievances about Twitter, and that this was somehow that their accounts being suspended for violent rhetoric or misinformation was a violation of the First Amendment. And again, that is fourth grade civics. At best, sixth grade civics that they're flunking. A private company saying, we don't want to play with you anymore, has nothing to do with the First Amendment, has nothing to do with your free speech rights. The First Amendment is all about the government. And the government cannot suppress your free speech rights. Not Twitter, but that's what they spent the day on yesterday. And it's indicative of what we're going to be hearing from this Congress throughout the next couple of years. I asked Mark Pocan if does he foresee any bright spots? And we'll hear more from him later coming up about that. Badger men's basketball team got a win in Penn State last night. It took overtime to get there, 79-74. The Badgers were winners. They will be in Nebraska on Saturday to take on the Cornhuskers. Marquette men's basketball team will play at Georgetown on Saturday. And the Bucks are riding an 8-game winning streak into L.A., where they will take on the Lakers tonight and then the Clippers on Friday night. And then they will be home next Tuesday, Valentine's Day, for a game with the Boston Celtics for supremacy in the Eastern Conference. So when we come back, we should be hearing from Dr. Kristen Lyerly and Dr. Pat McBride, starting our Hometown Health segment a little bit early because Pat McBride has such an amazing story to tell. And that includes all about, you know, the power of having just enough people believe in you to get you over the hump. We'll have more in just a bit here on Up North News Radio. This one's for our guest, Milwaukee Pat McBride. Bucks.
That's the name of our team, and we will win.
With an effort supreme, because they play basketball in a professional way.
Go, go, fight, fight, and hooray.
Fight and hooray.
How we handle the ball.
Handle the ball.
That's a sign.
Swedish Orchestra. You know how many times I heard that, Pat?
I could not even fathom a guess, but when I read that in your book about, you know, what you thought of the first Milwaukee Bucks jingle, I had to go looking for it, knowing that you were coming on board. Pat McBride has visited with us once before, mentor to our good friend, Dr. Kristen Lyerly, who also joins us. Good morning, Kristen.
Good morning.
So glad to have you here at this very early hour as you're taking care of other business today. When we met with Pat McBride, I had not read his book yet. And then for Christmas, Dr. Lyerly got me The Luckiest Boy in the World. It was, unfortunately, Dr. McBride signed it incorrectly. He signed it as The Other Pat, and it's pretty clear to me, if there's The Other Pat, it's me. You are the original, you are the real deal, and we are just very honored to have you here. The book, for folks that haven't heard us before, talks about, you know, Pat's childhood, which was not easy, with a couple of parents who were well-known reporters, but also, I hope you don't take offense to the term raging alcoholics, but it really seems to apply in this case.
Mm-hmm. And that's a very apt description.
Yeah. And again, at the same time, and what you really get from this book is these are people, obviously, they were very well-respected reporters, highly educated. They taught you all kinds of values, but they had this disease of addiction, which did some terrible things as well. And then you talk about your path toward becoming the Milwaukee Brewers' first ball boy, working for the Bucks and the Packers. And so people are saying, wait, Dr. Lyerly's here. We're talking about Hometown Health. What's that? We're going to do a lot of that in the next segment when we normally do Hometown Health. We'll talk about Dr. McBride and his career in public health. And, you know, what it means to have mentors and the value of teachers and, you know, even just a good neighbor or a good friend or something like that. But I did want to spend a couple of minutes here talking about those early days, those sports days. And let me start first with this. We just had LeBron James break the all-time NBA points record for scoring, topping Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. who was there at the court for part of the little ceremony when LeBron broke the record. Do you mind sharing a little bit of your thoughts on Kareem and some of the NBA stars of your day working in the Bucks locker room back when we were playing goofy fight songs like that one?
Well, I was really pleased to see the way Kareem handled that. It's the way he is. He's a highly intelligent, very classy person. People don't understand the kind of person he is. He's very shy and introverted, and he's not normally out there. He's 60 years as a social justice advocate for big causes. He's a writer of over 25 books. He was proud of LeBron because LeBron is a person that's given back to his community. And, you know, records don't mean that much to him. What means a lot to him is what he's accomplished. You know, over his lifetime, I think. And, you know, he's proud to be a parent and a grandparent and just like the rest of us, you know. When I was there, he was a winner. You know, he won at every level, you know, high school, college, the Bucks. You know, the Bucks were the first franchise to win a championship in their third year as a team. And it was Lou Alcindor and, of course, adding Oscar Robertson. You don't win without the great Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He had actually changed his name in 1968, but he was unstoppable. I mean, he could have scored as many points as he wanted, but he was a great person and a great team player.
And you get into that when you're talking about, at one point in the book, those intangible qualities of leadership, that you can have all the basketball skills in the world and or anything else. I was about to say surgical skills, whatever the case may be. The skills alone don't necessarily make you a leader. In fact, the modern day version of that is Kyrie Irving was just traded from Brooklyn to Dallas. He is a cancer on every team that he goes on. And yet there he was talking about his leadership skills that he's bringing to Dallas. And he's highly skilled, but not a leader. You saw that, you know, firsthand. I would guess not just with basketball, but all the sports that you were involved in.
Yes. And I would tell you that, you know, look at the record of the Los Angeles Lakers right now. I mean, LeBron is a really great player, but and he's won championships, you know, he's won four championships. But Kareem was a champion at every level that he went to because he made everyone great around him. You know, when I was with the Bucks, Bob Dandridge averaged 19.6 points per game. And we had players that were drafted in the fourth and sixth round, like Greg Smith and Bob Dandridge and other players that Kareem made great around him because he was unselfish.
And then to take it to real life is where I was going to pivot to Kristen as well, because again, you had Dr. McBride as a mentor, but in your clinical work and of course in the surgical suite where OBGYNs are all the time, and my being married to one of those, we talk all the time about cowboys. You know, the surgeons out there that they know they have amazing skills, but holy cow, they can't they can't charm anybody. Shall we put it that way, Kristen? So you know the value that people should take into any workplaces. Don't try to get by on your skills alone.
Well, it's really true. You have to have the whole package. And some people are great mentors and some people are more like cowboys. But the truth is, every student needs a mentor. And as much as we try in medicine to pair people like a dating service with someone who's going to help them get to that next level, it really has to happen naturally. It has to be something that you seek as a mentee and something that you're willing to offer as a mentor. And in fact, just last week, I reached out to Dr. McBride because I was working with a medical student who a different medical student had connected me with. And I said, here are this guy's interests, and he seems really bright and motivated. Who should we connect him to? And through our little world of connections, it took us, 2 minutes just to write a couple emails back and forth to each other. But this could be a connection, if he makes the most of it, that could be incredibly fruitful for him. So really, it goes back to that thing that we're missing in the world right now, which is more connection, more care, more investment in each other.
Because that way you end up, if not in a professional Hall of Fame, then somebody's personal Hall of Fame. And I say that with a purpose. You have a chapter here called The Halls of Fame and Shame. Now, last time we visited, I hadn't read the book yet, and I asked for one example of somebody in the Hall of Shame, and you told a story, and I would just urge people to read the book to learn more. But, you know, the reason for bringing this up is that as you look at it, there's people that you think are heroes because of what you see on the field, but they're not really great people. And then there's other people that maybe they look a little intimidating at first, but then they turn out to be some of the nicest folks out there. And as somebody working in the clubhouse, as a kid, basically, I mean, you really got to, I think your head had to spin a few times that you thought somebody was going to be one way and they turned out to be the other.
You know, I was thinking the other day about how incredible it was to get a dugout ready, full of bats and helmets and everything, and put on the uniform of a visiting team, and then run out and kneel down in the on-deck circle next to Carl Yastrzemski or Henry Aaron or Frank Robinson or Harmon Killebrew and look over and be in the stands and be like, you know, I'd get chills, you know. But what I tell people all the time is that what we learned in the locker room is it took 5 minutes to understand that it wasn't a player's statistics. It wasn't their points scored or their batting average or the number of home runs they hit. It was the way they treated us. And that's true in the world of medicine. I mean, you walk into an operating room or you walk into, you know, if a surgeon's throwing instruments or screaming at you or a mentor is yelling at you, you don't learn in that environment. You're just scared and you shut down. Viola Davis said the other day as she was being interviewed about her Grammy, you know, she became the EGOT, you know, Emmy, Grammy, Oscar, and Tony. Mm-hmm. She said, the way to be successful in life, it takes one person to believe in you, just one person that believes in you. And that's so important for young people to understand right now. That's what my book is about. One person believed in me, one. And that was the trainer of the Milwaukee Bucks. And it changed my life. And that's why I dedicated my life to young people at the medical school. That was so important to me to return to that medical school and help young people. So that was the lesson I learned inside those locker rooms. And I tried to convey that in my book. And so I encourage anybody listening that if you've got an opportunity to help young people, to reach out and lift them up, because, you know, when somebody like Harmon Killebrew was kind to me and showed up for my younger brother, my younger brother's life was changed by Harmon Killebrew as a young person. He was struggling. And now he's the Associate Dean of Public Health at Washington University. I mean, it's a story you can't make up.
No, and it says everything about you know, mentorship, and we'll talk more about that after the upcoming break here. But I wanted to get into one more thing that's a somewhat sports related, because you talked about setting up the dugout for a game, and you're setting up the locker room. We have talked about that there are tales of professional sports in here. There's tales of alcoholism. There's values of journalism. The one thing I think we've kind of undersold in the book is the work that has to be done to set up these sporting events. Now, I have a son-in-law who is essentially an equipment manager with a Division I school. So I have a rough idea of what he does. But I appreciated it so much more after reading this book that anybody thinking about any kind of a career in sports should read this. Not that it's all, you know, translates to, you know, 2023, but certainly some of the values of it in wanting to set the table for, again, whether it's a locker room, a surgical suite, you know, your own office, wherever it is. I know how much, Dr. McBride, you appreciate the setup, folks, having been one yourself.
Yeah. Well, imagine being an 18-year-old kid and being in charge of the equipment for a professional basketball team.
Yeah.
You know, I was a senior in high school, and I had to order all the uniforms and all the socks and everything. And my first road trip with the Bucks actually was to Green Bay, and I had all the equipment together and everything, and I thought I had everything done, and I forgot socks. And the team showed up, and we had no socks for Milwaukee Bucks, you know. And the team was out there warming up without socks, you know, so I had to quickly call a sporting goods store and and bring socks. It was really, it was an important lesson. It, you know, the players were teasing me and giving me a hard time, and you're going to get fired. And, you know,
God,
but we got socks and we made it. And, you know, after that, I'll tell you what, I developed checklists.
Oh, yeah.
Which was really important to me as a future physician, mm-hmm. because when I went into, you know, any kind of procedure, any kind of thing, and, you know, I became the director of a clinic when I came right out of residency, and man, I had checklists.
Oh, you have to.
Kristen knows. You don't go to a medical procedure without a checklist.
And when we come back, we're going to start by talking about all the times Kristen Lyerly throws instruments around the operating room.
right.
More with Kristen Lyerly and our special guest, Patrick McBride, coming up in just a bit. This is Up North News Radio for a Thursday.
Be proud of our Milwaukee Bucks. Go, Bucks, go!
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
Down and troubled, and you need some love and care.
It is our occasion to wish a very happy 81st birthday to singer, songwriter, and legend Carole King. Born Carole Joan Klein in Manhattan, she and her then husband and songwriting partner Jerry Goffin would pen a truckload of international pop hits. Including that one, which seemed appropriate for our hometown health segment and the importance of friends and mentors. And we've been talking a lot with our guest, Pat McBride, about some of his early days in the locker rooms for the Brewers, the Bucks, the Packers. But Kristen, you got to meet him more as a mentor in med school when he'd become a recognized leader in public health. And it is very clear in talking or listening to you talk about Pat McBride that you want to be as much of a mentor to people as he was to you, or is to you, I should say.
Yeah. Well, what people don't realize is that he was the person who medical students would go to when they had a question, when they had a need, when something was going on in their lives. And that happens to nearly every medical student. There's always something going on. So he, for generations of medical students, he was that person. He helped to train and support and mentor, I don't know, scores of physicians. There are many, many, many Kristens out there who are as grateful, if not more grateful, to Dr. McBride for just being there and doing it in such an authentic, just true, meaningful way.
And Pat, you hinted at that in our last segment about the importance of it, because it only took one or two people to make a difference in your life. I should tell the listeners, I recorded an interview with one of the state Supreme Court candidates, Dane County Judge Everett Mitchell. We will play that on Monday. And he tells a story about how, again, his life was pretty much given up, washed out. He was never going to make anything of himself. And there was one teacher who believed in him and set him on a path. So you'll hear that story on Monday. But Pat, you talked about that one person a bit, but there was definitely more than one person who kind of took you under their wing, just gave you some advice now and then, and they didn't have to, but they chose to see that in you.
Yeah, I was really fortunate. You know, I was in this really troubled home and was a middle kid, and I was really lost. And I won an essay contest to be the first bat boy for the Milwaukee Brewers. And actually, it was interesting that the contest was judged by Eddie Matthews, who was the third baseman for the Milwaukee Braves, obviously the Hall of Famer. And when I got to the clubhouse of the Milwaukee Brewers, my boss there was a guy named Jim Kaczynski, and he was actually infamous. He was known as Big Jim. And I decided that if I was going to keep that job, I was going to work as hard as I could. And, you know, that set the stage for me for the rest of my life, actually, because the rest of my life, I worked as hard as I possibly could. And when he saw me doing that, he asked me if I'd stay on and work with him. And he also noticed something. I don't know what it was, but he said, you know, if you're going to work here, you're going to work long hours. So I'm going to need to see your report cards. And he made me bring in my report cards. And he said, you have to maintain a 3.5 or greater grade point average to work here. And I wasn't doing that at the time. I was really struggling in school, especially in conduct, it turns out. So I was a big goof off at school. And so I thought, oh my gosh, if I want to work for the Brewers. And at the time, the Green Bay Packers were playing in Milwaukee at the time, five games. And I wanted to work those Green Bay Packer games. So I brought in my report cards and they started getting above 3.5 and they went up from there. And the rest is history.
And, you know, you were a goof off, but you are an identical twin. And your twin brother was the star. He was the athlete and the great kid and the great student. And you were, I'm quoting you now, the dumb one.
I was the dumb twin.
Right.
That stigma really stuck with you, and you had to rise above that.
Yeah. You know, teachers can do that. You know, I was called the dumb twin by several teachers, and it really stuck with me. I really believed it. And I thought, well, I didn't really have a future, so I didn't know what I was going to do. You know, when I became an equipment manager, I thought that was going to be my career. You know, I was going to pass out towels for a living, you know. He was so brilliant. He's the mayor of our hometown. Chris DeNoe, he's a big-time politician. He's a lawyer, and he was a 12-letter winning athlete at UW-Milwaukee, and I just didn't have that kind of chops, you know. So I immediately saw myself as dumb.
And even when you were brilliant and you were doing all of these things with the Bucks and the Brewers and the Packers, there were still those moments when you questioned whether you had what it took to be a good doctor, to be successful in your practice. And it's crazy how that stigma keeps repeating itself and keeps causing that self-doubt despite all of your successes.
You know, for the listeners out there that kind of went through tough times like that and went through, I'll tell you, there's 80% of young people that live in dysfunctional families. As a physician with three degrees, as dean of students, until I was near the end of my career, I always thought that I was not really worthy. And it's called the imposter syndrome. And I always thought I had to really overprove myself. And I really felt like somebody was going to find out that I wasn't really as smart as I was pretending to be, you know. And here I was, you know, I had 200, you know, journal articles and five textbooks published and yada, yada, you know. And I was always looking over my shoulder thinking, boy, they're going to find out that I'm not as smart as they think I am, you know. And that comes from fourth and fifth grade teachers telling you you're not smart.
And if there's another a lesson, a corollary that we should get out of this, it's not just the importance of kind words and encouragement, be a mentor where you can lift somebody up when they're down. But the corollary of that is, you know, again, the power of words, and to recognize what you think is just a passing comment, a throwaway, a glib insult, you know, the damage that can do to somebody, you know, that they're not going to let on, but, you know, our words really do wound. And again, we would like to think that, you know, teachers are better than that than they were back in the day. God knows I could tell you about Sister Mary at Our Lady of Guadalupe out in West St. Paul once upon a time, but that's a story for another day. So I want to pivot for just a second, though, to you've talked about mentorship. We've talked about healthcare. We've talked about being a good example. What I want to spend just a minute on here is addiction, because it is something that, again, you saw in these parents who were brilliant, had these gifts, and yet also had these demons. And so while we're talking about being that voice of encouragement, have you had to be that voice that is essentially, what's the word now? Intervention. You know, have you had to be the one to say to people, you know, maybe nobody else has said this, but, you know, I think you need to go on a different path here?
You know, I was a family physician for 20 years. And I worked in a small town. Actually, I worked in the small town that Joe Biden was in yesterday in Wisconsin, DeForest, Wisconsin. I practiced there for 6 years. I delivered over 500 babies. And I can't tell you how much trouble. You know, Wisconsin is the number one state for binge drinking. It's the number one state for chronic drinking. It was really painful for me to see some of these families struggle like this, you know. So there were many times that I had to confront an individual or family, you know, I had to do it, and I had to do it gently and firmly. And I helped a number of people get into rehab, and the problems have gotten worse. You know, now we're dealing with, you know, much tougher drugs. You know, I mean, we had heroin and cocaine, and I worked with people with those kinds of addictions. But, you know, now we've got meth and things like that. So there were a lot of kids that I dealt with that had drug issues, you know, and we worked with families to get them into addiction. But coming from a family with addiction really helped me understand how to recognize it and how to be clear with families about what the issues were going to be, and how to find out where there were places that were doing it. And at the time that I was a young family physician, I was in Al-Anon, which I really encourage people that are in families that are having addiction. Al-Anon helped me tremendously deal with my own issues, issues like anger and sadness and, you know, all the feelings that you have when you have two parents that are addicted, and how I dealt with my own issues. And I wanted to be a good parent. I wanted to be a good spouse. And I don't think I could have been those things without dealing with my own issues. And Al-Anon is a tremendous organization to help you deal. And I also wasn't being a good kid to my parents, who are good people but had a bad disease. That's really important. You know, I was really angry with them for, you know, their disease, and it's a disease, you know, and I had to get over that anger and forgive them, which I talk about in my book quite a bit.
That's
a powerful moment, I can tell you that.
I was going to say, that's one of the trickiest things that all three of us have experienced, is separating the person who you love from the disease that they are suffering from.
Yeah, it is very important. I want to close with, we're going to turn the spotlight on Dr. Lyerly somewhat here, because here's somebody who, again, could just be, you know, a simple country doctor, if you will, but decided to put herself out there in the political arena and in the advocacy arena. And Pat, you are no stranger to, you know, people in your family and in your life with political views. It's harder than ever if somebody wants to stay above politics, but should they even, especially if they're in positions of trust? Is it okay to advocate? Not necessarily in the exam room, but I mean, much like Kristen does, take on a public role in speaking out for issues that you care about.
You know, we transformed our school to a school of medicine and public health in 2001 for a real important purpose. And it was for people like Dr. Lyerly to understand that medicine has some really critical issues that are important that we're going to be talking about in the next segment. But we're so proud of people like Dr. Lyerly for taking a stand, because health is a critical issue in the United States. You know, we have so many people that don't have access, and we have women that have really critical issues that Dr. Lyerly is addressing, you know, that don't have control over their own bodies right now, for example. And there are issues where people can't get care for addiction, for example. And, you know, we want physicians and nurses and healthcare providers to speak out and speak up and stand up for their patients. And I can't be prouder of Dr. Lyerly for doing that. You know, my mother was very active in politics, as I read about in the book. She ran JFK's campaign, and she was really clear that she was really active in civil rights, and she marched us out there when we were 4 and 5 years old, putting pamphlets indoors, and she made it really clear that we were supposed to stand up for people, and that I'm really proud that Dr. Lyerly's doing that.
You done
well,
good.
And what Pat Kreitlow said earlier about maybe not in the exam room, I would disagree. I think advocacy has to happen in the exam room, because that's where the problems are right now. That's where politicians are pushing their way in and preventing people from getting the care that they need, from being able to afford the medications that they need to stay alive. Things like insulin, or things like hypertension, blood pressure pills, where they're cutting pills because they can't afford their prescriptions. Advocacy needs to happen at all levels, and everyone needs to be encouraged to advocate for themselves.
All right. We've run out of time here, but I did want to get in at least one more question about public health. So if you could, do you mind sticking around for a minute or two beyond the next break, Dr. McBride?
Absolutely.
Okay. We'll do that. And then, so we'll wrap up our conversation there, and then we'll hear a little bit from Congressman Mark Pocan about riding on Air Force One with President Biden yesterday on that trip out to DeForest. We'll play more of that on Friday, but we'll have an excerpt coming up in just a bit here, and then wrap up our conversations for this Thursday on Up North News Radio. We'll be back.
Oh, yeah, now you've got a friend.
It's a great day to be alive. I know the sun's still shining when I close.
Happy birthday wishes go out to Travis Tritt as well, who turns 60 years old today. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has been on such a tear about whitewashing history that school districts have been closing down their school libraries, and books are being banned that have any kind of racial tint to them whatsoever, including books about Roberto Clemente, Henry Aaron, others who broke color barriers. Dr. McBride, as somebody who worked with Henry Aaron, I can't even imagine how that must feel.
Well, you know, Henry Aaron was one of the finest, classiest, most humble people that I ever met in my life. He's truly one of my heroes, not because of his statistics, but because of the kind of person he was. Don't forget that he started his career in Major League Baseball in Eau Claire, Wisconsin. Mm-hmm. His mother put him on a bus with a bunch of bologna sandwiches, and up he came, and she was scared to death that he was going to the North, you know, because of the racial tensions. And, you know, Wisconsin should be really proud of the way we've taken care of Henry Aaron. And, you know, when he got to, you know, I got to be a bat boy with him when he was with the Atlanta Braves. I saw him play with the Milwaukee Braves, and oh my God, I was in awe of him. And then I knelt down next to him. And there's no finer privilege in my life than kneeling down to, next to Henry Aaron, the home run king. And then I traveled with him when he was with the Milwaukee Brewers, and he would sit next to Bob Uecker, and Bob Uecker used to just entertain him. And watching Bob Uecker crack up Henry Aaron, and the reason he needed to be entertained was because of all the racial death threats that he received during his home run chase, mm-hmm. which was, to me, absolutely heartbreaking, because all he said was, I just want to play baseball.
Yeah, you know? Some of us just want to live our lives as best we can. With that, our time grows short, but thank you. Now I'm already looking forward to the next visit, Pat. Thank you so very much. We are honored by your presence. Kristen, thank you so much for getting us connected. We'll talk to you again on Monday morning.
Look forward to it.
All right. You bet. Before we go, I talked to Congressman Mark Pocan. We'll play the full interview on Friday morning, but wanted to give a little sense of what he had to say flying on Air Force One with President Biden during the trip to Wisconsin yesterday. We're joined now by Congressman Mark Pocan. Congressman, how are you?
Hey, very good, Pat. Glad to be here.
Well, glad to have you here. Now, when you flew with the president on Air Force One, first off, let's do the journey, and then we'll do the visit. How far in advance do you hear about something like that?
I think we first heard about it on Friday, but honestly, I don't think we were confirmed on Air Force One until about 7 o'clock last night.
Wow. So you had a little time to pack a bag.
Little. Emphasis on little. But, you know, it's a pinch-worthy experience. You know, here you are on Air Force One, you're sitting with a bunch of the president's staff, and I'm sitting next to President Terry O'Sullivan, the head of LIUNA, International Union. President comes out and you talk for 15 minutes, and some about the speech, some about policy, and then somehow we got to me growing up in Kenosha and American Motors, and we got talking about 60s cars. It was an interesting flight, but, you know, I have to admit, I mean, you know, it's one of those things you'll probably never forget, right? When you do a trip like that, you know, and have the opportunity to have the president come to your district after something as important as the State of the Union. It shows how important Wisconsin is. The fact that he came to a labor hall, especially for me as someone who is a strong advocate for labor issues and for workers, you know, it was extra special.
What do you think it is the significance that so far his economic plan and his message has been so much more inclusive of, you know, blue collar jobs, as well as we always talk about the tech economy? And look, Madison is a hub of the tech economy, and you know, there are institutes of higher learning here, but there's also a lot of things that have to be built. So what does that say about what this administration is planning for its economic blueprint?
Yeah, I'll tell you, more than I think any president that I've known, and this I guess is the third president, but you know, at that level, he is grounded with where real people are, right? You know, Barack Obama, I loved many things about him, amazing orator, you know, a once in a century individual, but he surrounded himself with people from Ivy League colleges and thought that that was the way to govern. You know, Donald Trump, well, we'll leave it at that.
Good call.
But with Joe Biden, you know, what was interesting is, you know, he's very inclusive and very focused on things like manufacturing jobs. Because as we know in Wisconsin, not everyone is going to go take a tech job or do some of these other things. Not everyone goes to college, but everyone wants a good family supporting wage. And you can do that with a lot of different manufacturing and blue collar jobs. And, you know, our infrastructure was desperately needing an investment of money. And that finally happened after four presidents of both parties talked about it. Joe Biden got it done. But those are all good blue collar family supporting jobs. And he's really proud and loves to talk about that sort of thing. So I just think he's grounded with where real people are. He's not surrounded by a bunch of Harvard and Yale and Princeton eggheads. He's not surrounded by a bunch of people who just care about, you know, corporate donors to their party. He cares about real people because I think he's always been pretty connected as a politician.
Well, he sounds like a guy that, you know, took the train every day and, you know, talked to real people for all those years when he was in the Senate. How are things from the laborers' point of view, you know, labor overall, and then the laborers' union specifically, as you talk to the folks there? You know, what is their take on all this? Is there, you know, skepticism because, you know, politics is politics, or do they really have a positive outlook on where things are going between the infrastructure bill and the other things that have been in the Biden agenda so far?
So, you know, I had a lot of conversations, especially with the international president of LIUNA about this. Not only is the infrastructure bill, you know, clearly a number of trades are going to benefit quite well, people who work in the trades. And for 5 or 10 years, this work is going to be out there because of the bills we did last session. But the CHIPS Act, you know, even though the idea is to make chips here again, so clearly there's going to be manufacturing jobs around that, the construction jobs alone to build the facilities so we can build these in the U.S., is $50 billion worth of construction dollars that are going to be construction jobs right now. And then the rest of the jobs will be there for the future. So there's a lot to be very, you know, optimistic around on the jobs front. Clearly coming out of COVID, that was where the president, the White House's focus, as Democrats' focus was. And, you know, I think we've greatly succeeded in that area.
There's Congressman Mark Pocan. We'll have the full interview in our first hour tomorrow, the 6 a.m. hour Friday, here on Up North News Radio. In sports, the Wisconsin Badgers were winners in Penn State yesterday in overtime, 79-74. They will play at Nebraska on Saturday. The Marquette men's basketball team travels to Georgetown and will play there on Saturday. The Milwaukee Bucks take their 8-game winning streak into L.A. for two nights. They play the Lakers tonight and the Clippers tomorrow night. They're back home on Valentine's Day on Tuesday against the Boston Celtics. A busy day tomorrow on Up North News Radio. Again, in our 6 a.m. hour, we will hear more from Congressman Mark Pocan about the State of the Union speech, about President Biden's trip to Wisconsin and other things he hopes can maybe get done in Congress this year. And then we'll hear from a couple of our regular contributors, Kia Vakil, Courier Newsroom National Correspondent, and Joe Zepecki, Democratic strategist, who will tell us some stories related to the State of the Union address and its impact on Wisconsin. That's all coming up tomorrow on a very busy Friday. In the meantime, enjoy your Thursday. We'll see you tomorrow.